Welcome to the Political Rewind. I'm Madhani Muturi. Coming up today, the road to the vice president's office and American voters overseas. But first, pocketbook politics.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris. This week, the tumultuous news from Wall Street has driven the presidential campaign squarely back to the issue voters say is most important, the economy. Both Republican John McCain and Democrat Barack Obama blame a failed regulatory system for the current situation on Wall Street. They're promising reform. We're joined now by two correspondents out on the road. NPR's David Greene is with the McCain campaign in Michigan, and Scott Horsley is with the Obama campaign in Nevada. Hello to both of you.
Good to be with you, Michelle.
Hi, Michelle.
First to you, Scott. The latest meltdown on Wall Street and the insurance giant AIG. I'm wondering if the government's bailout has worked its way into Obama's message today.
It definitely has. He opened his remarks here in Elko, Nevada, talking about the AIG bailout. In addition to being a battleground state in the November election, Nevada has the dubious distinction of having the nation's highest home foreclosure rate. Almost 12,000 homes were foreclosed on here just last month. And, of course, it's that housing collapse that's at the root of what we're now seeing on Wall Street. The message that Barack Obama has been trying to convey in recent days is that while the storm is just now raining down on Wall Street, the dark clouds have been gathering across the country for a long time.
It's the message of a new ad the Obama campaign is rolling out this evening. That ad is 2 minutes long, and that bears repeating, 2 minutes long. It's all about the economy and Barack Obama's plan to deal with it. Let's take a quick listen.
For many of you, the people I've met in town halls, backyards, and diners across America, our troubled economy isn't news. 600,000 Americans have lost their jobs since January. Paychecks are flat.
Scott, that's quite a gamble. Two-minute-long ad. Why take that kind of risk?
Well, and what Barack Obama is trying to say in that ad and in the campaign appearances like those today in Nevada is that this is not an accident. This is not just the invisible hand at work. He lays the blame for this economic slowdown squarely at the doorstep of the Republican administration and an economic philosophy that he says John McCain has shared.
David, I want to bring you into this. John McCain yesterday indicated that he was against a federal bailout for the insurance giant AIG. Today, it sounds like he's supporting this.
Yeah, it's the real balance he's trying to find. He's not a fan of government intervention, and he wants to show that he's on the side of American workers. He says that's where the government should be, not bailing out big companies. But he also wants to recognize the reality of what some of these collapses on Wall Street mean and how the government does have to respond. And that's sort of the image he's trying to show. He's back to his maverick, the reformer. He's been talking a lot about his biography as a Teddy Roosevelt-style Republican who believes that capitalism can breed corruption, as he's been quoting Roosevelt, and that he will act when he has to.
John McCain has a new ad out that focuses on the economy. It's a 30-second spot. It starts by saying that worker security has been put at risk by greed on Wall Street. Let's pick it up there.
My opponent's only solutions are talk and taxes. I'll reform Wall Street and fix Washington. I've taken on tougher guys than this before.
There you hear John McCain talking tough, talking about change, but not talking about a lot of specifics. Are you hearing more specifics on the stump?
You know, it's so interesting, the gloomy music in that ad, because McCain, when he was at a GM plant in Michigan today, sounded a little more upbeat, standing with workers and saying he feels like they can survive and remain competitive. You know, when McCain has been getting specific, it's been in attacking Barack Obama. I think he realizes that, you know, the economy is a political weakness for him. He's admitted that, but he doesn't want to let his opponent make hay. He came out with one specific attack today. McCain said that Obama is talking about delaying his economic plan because of the adverse impact that his tax increases might have on the economy. And McCain said that's an indication that Obama's admitting that his plan could be pretty harmful.
Scott Horsley, you're traveling with the Obama campaign. Is Obama on the defensive on this tax issue?
Well, no. He points out that his tax plan would actually be a bigger tax break for about 80% of Americans. And he's also urging supporters not to buy what he's calling an 11th hour conversion by John McCain, who is at heart a conservative Republican who believes in a very limited role for government in the economy. Barack Obama is saying, like President Bush, John McCain ignores problems until they reach a crisis point, and then he's forced to scramble to react instead of trying to head these problems off at the pass.
That was NPR's Scott Horsley traveling with the Barack Obama campaign in Elko, Nevada, and David Green with the John McCain campaign in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you, Michelle.
My pleasure, Michelle.
And I'm Renee Montaigne. We're going to spend this part of the program talking about the vice presidential candidates, and we'll start with Democrat Joe Biden. He's attracted a lot less attention than his Republican counterpart, Sarah Palin. But Biden has been on the stump almost constantly. This week, he was in the hard-fought upper Midwest, Michigan and Ohio, focusing on the economy and attacking Republican presidential nominee John McCain. In short, Biden's been doing exactly what candidates for vice president have always done. NPR's Don Gagne is traveling with him.
On the road this week with Joe Biden, it all feels kind of timeless.
One and two and set and go.
It could be almost any high school marching band in any small town. In this case, it's Maumee, Ohio, and the band is wearing the purple and gold of the Panthers of Maumee High. A big topic this week is the economy and the turmoil on Wall Street. Predictably, Biden aims some of the blame at John McCain, noting that the Republican presidential candidate began one day this week calling the fundamentals of the economy strong.
2 hours later, literally, I'm not making this up, at 11 o'clock, as we Catholics say, John had an epiphany. At 11 o'clock, John McCain said that we're in great economic crisis. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this boy had what they call a political epiphany, not a policy epiphany.
The not-so-subtle references to Catholicism are a not-so-subtle reminder of something Biden shares with many voters here in the industrial part of northern Ohio. Catholics are a key demographic here in the state and in neighboring Michigan and Pennsylvania. And Biden's speech in Maumee was peppered with such references. Moments after the epiphany line, Biden talked about John McCain's frequent praise of Bush administration economic policies.
As again we say, bless me, Father, for I have sinned. Give me a break. We have made, seriously, that's his comment. We have made great economic progress during the Bush years.
If you're wondering when you'll get a reference to Biden's sainted Catholic mother, it came later in the day in Worcester. But back in Maumee, near the end of his speech, Biden tossed in yet another biblical reference. This time it was on McCain's promise to crack down on greed on Wall Street.
So let's take a look at John's conversion here. Something happened on the road to Damascus. John fell off his horse, but he got back up on the same horse.
Joe Biden's roadshow is not nearly as extensive as that of Republican Sarah Palin. There's none of the celebrity buzz that is so evident at her rallies, but Biden is drawing crowds of committed Democrats, including lots of union members who have long seen Joe Biden as a friend. Al Silak has been a member of the Electrical Workers Union for 3 decades.
Joe's been around for a long time. It's not a flashy pick, but like I say, he supported labor, so he tells things like they are, and that's what people need to be told, the facts.
Last night, Biden drew several thousand in Worcester, Ohio. Most of his rallies draw only hundreds, but they tend to be a specific kind of voter. Lots of labor guys, often Catholics. They're constituencies Barack Obama had trouble with during his primary fight with Hillary Clinton. If they are ambivalent, it could mean real trouble in a state like Ohio, the state everyone agrees made the difference in 2004 and may well again in 2008. Today, Biden continues his bus tour with stops in Canton and then in Youngstown. Don Gagne, NPR News in Maumee, Ohio.
John McCain's running mate has been traveling alongside him. And elsewhere in today's program, we hear Sarah Palin's answer when invited to explain her foreign policy experience. Right now, we'll listen to the way that Palin looks to women. Democrats tend to get more votes from women than Republicans, who hope Palin can change that in 2008. NPR's Ina Jaffe went to the battleground state of Missouri to talk to women and see what effect the governor of Alaska is having on their choice.
After the Republican convention, one of the first places that John McCain and Sarah Palin campaigned together was Lee's Summit, Missouri. The Kansas City suburb leans Republican, and as many as 4,000 people showed up at the rally. But none of the women at this meeting of the Lee Summit chapter of Moms were there. Their organization supports women who've chosen to stay home and raise their children. So, stand in line for hours with toddlers to get into a political rally? No way. But follow the campaign and have strong opinions? Absolutely. Sherry Moore, an evangelical Christian, was at the meeting with her one-year-old daughter and three-year-old son.
Palin was actually what put me over the edge.
And pushed her firmly into the Obama camp.
She's never met a foreign head of state. She's been caught time and time again in a mistruth. She just scares me, you know. I'm one of those people that should be a Palin supporter, but I want a strong leader in the White House. It not just because she goes to a church or because she happens to be a female.
Sarah Palin was a decisive factor in a very different way for Kathleen Eggers, who used to be more anti-Obama than pro-John McCain.
Palin just seemed to breathe new life into the Republican Party for me. She's just made me a lot more interested in what's going on.
Eggers and Moore were among half a dozen moms who volunteered to talk politics. Each of them said the economy was a concern. Most said the war was, too. Yet they were evenly split, three for Obama and three for McCain. There was quite a bit of child care going on as we talked. It made Gretchen Doyle, Obama supporter and mother of two, wonder how Palin could manage the vice presidency with her five children.
I know that I could not be vice president, and I'm not saying that you can't have kids and be the vice president, but she has responsibilities. And I mean, her youngest is he just over a year or under a year? And he has Down syndrome, and I just question her judgment.
The McCain campaign has called such concerns sexist. McCain supporter and mother of three, Tracy McGill, said that male candidates are never questioned about their ability to raise children while holding office. So why Sarah Palin?
There are more and more stay-at-home dads. I think her husband is a big support to her. I think she's got a big challenge ahead of her, but I think it can be done.
Meanwhile, in strongly Democratic Kansas City, it wasn't Palin's children, but her qualifications that worried five University of Missouri women. Jamoke Belogan is 20 years old, African-American, and an Obama supporter.
And I kind of think that the Republicans are using her as kind of, hey, look, we have a woman too. And that's so devastating to me because I want to see a woman in office, but I want to see a qualified woman in office.
Belogan was in a lounge at the Campus Women's Center, where Center Director Brenda Bethman had a more cynical take on the issue of Palin's qualifications.
I actually think it's progress when unqualified women get chosen, since unqualified men have been chosen for years. So why not?
Bethman was one of a couple of Hillary Clinton supporters here. Another one, English professor Virginia Blanton, was angered over the sexist stereotypes aimed at Hillary Clinton and now is just as disgusted at the way that Sarah Palin's being portrayed.
Within a week of her speech at the Republican National Convention, there was the action figure doll brought out about her, and it's got this cutaway black leather, you know, sort of trench coat with short shorts, and she's really muscular and ready to kick people's hinies.
But regardless, none of these women were so sympathetic that they were actually going to vote for Sarah Palin and John McCain. Brenda Bethman is still so distressed about the way Hillary Clinton was treated, she isn't sure she'll vote at all.
I'm disenchanted with the whole process.
Obama,
and so there are days where I'm like, I'm just going to stay home because I can't vote for any of them with a clean conscience.
A day like that would be a good one for John McCain, helping him narrow the gender gap in this battleground state, if only by a single vote. Ina Jaffe, NPR News, Kansas City, Missouri.
It's the Political Rewind, and I'm Madhani Muturi. Coming up next, fighting to vote overseas.
A lot of us here in the U.S. have seven more weeks minus a day before we have to vote in this year's elections. But for an estimated 6 million Americans living overseas or serving in the military, deadlines to get and cast a ballot are rapidly approaching. And as NPR's Pam Fessler reports, some might have already missed their chance.
Kelly McBride has lived and voted from Latin America on and off for about 20 years, and it hasn't been easy. Mail delays and complicated rules have forced her to come up with her own system to get a ballot to her home state of Florida.
I have it sent to my parents' house. They FedEx it to me, so I make sure I get it on time. Then I FedEx it back to them. Then they mail it.
Which cost her about $100 and takes some meticulous planning. That's how McBride voted in 2004 from Ecuador. She assumes her ballot was counted, but isn't sure.
I hope so, because I've really gone to a lot of efforts to do it.
It's never been easy for Americans overseas to vote, and the numbers are striking. In 2006, only a third of the 1 million absentee ballots requested by military and overseas Americans were cast and counted. Michael Caudell Fagan of the Pew Center on the States says every state has different rules.
When will your ballot be mailed to you? Well, that's going to depend upon your state. Do you have to have that ballot notarized or an affidavit? It's going to depend on that state. Will your vote be counted? Too often, it will depend on that state.
He says some overseas voters, especially those in remote areas or war zones, face almost impossible deadlines. He notes that the Military Postal Service recommended that those stationed in Afghanistan and Iraq mail their completed ballots no later than September 30th.
But less than half our states, 24, even have absentee ballots available by September 30th.
In fact, only California has sent its ballots to overseas and military voters. The other states will send them out in the next 2.5 weeks. Beth Chapman is Secretary of State in Alabama, which has some of the toughest requirements, including the need for overseas voters to get two witnesses or a notary to sign their ballots.
Some states can fax, they can email, they can use FedEx, they can use UPS, but in our state, it's United States Postal Service only. And it's not humanly possible all ways to get those ballots there and back.
She says it's especially difficult for military voters who are constantly on the move.
A huge percentage of overseas military ballots come back to us for incorrect addresses.
Efforts are being made to fix things. Kelly McBride says Florida now has someone in every county to assist overseas voters. The Defense Department also runs the Federal Voting Assistance Program for military and civilian voters. Director Polly Brunelli says the Postal Service has agreed to speed up ballot delivery to and from overseas. And while efforts to try internet voting have largely stalled, some states do allow emailed ballots. Brunelli says voters can also use a write-in ballot for presidential and congressional races if they don't get their regular one on time.
So no matter where the voter is around the world, they can download the federal write-in absentee ballot from our website and send that into their local election official.
Another group goes further. The nonprofit Overseas Vote Foundation says its website allows overseas and military voters to customize their federal write-in ballot to a particular state. Susan Jedoshitska-Swina, who runs the foundation, says federal write-in ballots were often rejected in the past.
They weren't filled out properly, the candidate names were wrong, they weren't sent to the right address, they were too late.
So this year, her group has arranged with FedEx for free or cut-rate delivery of ballots from 89 countries. Jedoshitska-Swina says despite the looming deadlines, it's not too late to vote.
They can get online right now in 10 minutes. They've got their form, the mailing address, the instructions, and they're on their way. And that's what overseas voters should really be doing right now.
Like everyone else, she thinks the turnout this year could be huge. Pam Fessler, NPR News, Washington.
Thanks for listening to The Political Rewind, and we're blogging politics at Vox Politics. Find us at npr.org.